You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The truth is out there, and here, who knows? But either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, an X-Files first watch / rewatch podcast. Welcome to the Bloom Files. May I take your order? Because we're serving up two quality episodes of the X-Files with, I'd like to say, two quality hosts.
And a side of brains.
Exactly, and a side of brains. I put it on my best, I don't know, I guess that's not my magician voice. That's more like a radio DJ voice.
Yeah.
My magician voice would be like, a look before you, and
yes,
you will
exactly.
See a podcast.
It's what Mulder and Scully do the entire episode, and they're like, one card, two, you know, whatever. I don't know. I'm not a good magician.
I was going to say, that feels like a more of an old school magician thing. Like,
well, that's what he was doing with the cups thing in the beginning. But anyway, we're not talking about that.
Right, but I'd say it's more so like Jonathan Frakes in that show that he used to do, right?
Yeah. I also, little known fact about me, really don't like magicians.
Why don't you like magicians?
I don't know. I just find it all very, like...
Do you believe in magic in a young girl's heart?
Maybe, but I don't know, like, visual illusion to me and the people that do it tend to be a certain type of people that the vibe is just not there for me. Can't get on board with a magician.
Well, apologies that we're having two episodes that maybe did not necessarily meet your vibe.
No, but I like the Amazing Mellini episode. I think it's fun, but Hungry's, no, I don't like this episode. After rewatching it, I was like, oh yeah. Sorry, all the fans out there.
Well, I don't know if there are fans as much as it was like, okay, Mike needs to watch Mark Pellegrino. That was literally, I think, the impetus behind why so many people.
Okay, and I do think we got something out of this episode with the name Derwood Spinks.
Literally? I mean, people who listened to Down the Hatch this week know it is, I can say without a doubt, in my 32 years of existence,
it's pretty bonkers.
The worst name I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's really bad, but
it's so terrible. Derwood Spinks.
And he plays it off, and I feel like the connection between him and that name, it's just like,
your character's name is Derwood Spinks. Like, okay, great.
I know everything about this man.
I'm Derwood Spinks, the ex-con fry cook.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, yeah, we are talking about what episode is this in the season?
So episode three.
Third episode. So Hungry. We are backtracking a little bit.
Yes. And then episode 8, The Amazing Mellini.
Yes. And as we've mentioned, does star one Mark Pellegrino as Derwood Spinks.
So I would say, like, he's not the main star.
No, but I will say that anybody out there that doesn't listen to Down the Hatch or watch Lost will not understand why this is important. But he does play a character on Lost.
He does. He plays
a main character.
No, but a very important character, yes. I would say.
But I would say the star of this episode is the guy who plays Rob Roberts, another classic name.
Who wrote this episode?
I'm pretty sure that Vince Gilligan wrote this episode. He phoned it in a little bit.
I'm about to take my vacation. I have to write an episode in 3 hours. All right. Derwood Spinks and Rob Roberts.
Yeah, so they cast actor Chad Danella.
He looks like the most off-brand Tobey Maguire in...
Yes, he's been in
Jake Gyllenhaal and Donnie Darko is what I was thinking.
Yeah, and you know what? He's been in a lot of stuff from the 90s and the early 2000s, including, I think, one of his big claim to fames is Final Destination, the original.
Oh, was he one of the original guys in that?
I think so. He's definitely in it. I can't recall if he's...
He should have been in the episode where they crash the plane.
Yes, perhaps. And then he's just been in almost every teen television show from the 90s and early 2000s.
Is he doing anything today?
Recently, he was in Blindspot. He was in 12 episodes of Blindspot.
Okay.
So yes, he is doing something
as
today.
Rob Roberts, as the mutant.
No, as somebody named Jake Keaton, whoever watched Blindspot.
That's no Derwood Spinks.
No.
But we'll forgive that.
But yeah, I guess he was in a bunch of stuff, including Final Destination, and then he was in Final Destination 5, but not really. He was in archive footage.
Well, spoiler alert, Final Destination 5 ends with connecting back to the first movie.
Yeah, so it says archive footage in his IMDb thing, which is funny.
They didn't want to make him look that
old. Like he didn't actually do it. But yes, so we're talking about Hungry, which starts off at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
Did this called Fat Boy.
Did this make you hungry for any fast food?
No, I hate fast food. I'm like I will not eat fast food.
It's very true.
The furthest we go
is like Five Guys.
I wouldn't qualify that as fast food.
See, I would.
It's a little bit different. Fast food for me is like a big chain, like McDonald's or Burger King.
Yeah,
or
Five Guys is more made to order.
It's made to order. They're making it right there in front of you. You're seeing it's not a frozen patty taken out of it. Anyway, any fast food, not a big fan. I hate the way it tastes and I hate the way it makes you feel.
Is it because of this episode, partially?
No.
What I will say is interesting. Last week, I'm like, oh, they're finally setting things in California. Both episodes this week take place in California.
Yeah, they're not pretending that they're in Washington, D.C. when they're actually in California, which is nice.
Is that a tone for season 7 that they're like, we're not giving up pretenses, we'll just go to California a bunch?
It's funny you say that because there are a lot of episodes that do take place in California. There's one episode, Hollywood AD, that we're going to watch, which actually is like,
I would imagine by the title,
but they like go to Hollywood. They're like, and it's like very fun. But yeah, I guess they do that a lot. But I'm fine with it.
Yeah,
it doesn't take away. They're not. I only notice it in retrospect.
And I'd rather have them go on these sort of side missions than have them continue to pretend that they're in Washington, D.C.
or continue to pretend they're in, I don't know, the Northeast, whether or not.
So
Mix it up.
We start with a typical 90s cliche. We've seen this a number of times on the X-Files, but it feels more prominent as of late. Mm-hmm. The long-haired, grungy dude.
Yes.
Because we had sort of the punk guy right in...
Don Pankow.
In the Willie Garson episode.
Also, is Lucky Boy the fast food restaurant that is featured in Austin Powers?
So there's Big Boy is the actual chain restaurant, but they sort of do takes on that in Austin Powers.
And what's it? Is it called Lucky Boy?
No, I don't think it's called Lucky Boy.
Oh, it reminded me of it because it is like a baby, isn't it? In this,
it's like a cherubic, you know.
Isn't it the same in this one?
So simple.
Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But this guy is like, yeah, man, gonna get some Costa Mesa. Man.
Basically, he comes in at like probably the late hours to order something at the very last minute, and we both worked in customer service. We know this is the worst to deal with.
Truly. And this guy's like angrily demanding
Diet Sprite.
Yeah, that actually threw me for a loop. I don't think anyone drinks Diet Sprite.
Sprite feels very 90s to me.
I would love a nice...
Really?
I like Sprite, but not a Diet Sprite. That's disgusting. That's like basically medicine.
Well, this guy's going to get, I guess, a little bit of payback here. Karmic retribution for that Diet Sprite.
Well, and what gets me, and I think about this later, is like, basically this episode is done from the perspective of the monster. And that's what they talk about in like, okay, how are we going to do this? And this is from the perspective of Rob Roberts.
Yeah, I would imagine this is another minimal Mulder and Scully episode. I would imagine, true to what you talked about last week, a little bit of scheduling difficulties.
Yeah, so both David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson were filming movies during this time.
Oh my God.
David Duchovny was filming Return to Me with Minnie Driver. Have you ever seen that movie?
I haven't. What is it about?
It's a rom-com. And then
I cannot imagine him leading a rom-com.
It's actually a pretty cute movie, but the other, Gillian Anderson filming The House of Mirth, which was like a production company version of a play, I guess. Mm-hmm. House of Mirth is a play, and she filmed it. And so they filmed Hungry before any of the other episodes of the season, including the Sixth Extinction in the beginning. So they filmed this before they did any of the other.
So this was like the first episode they filmed of the season.
Yeah, but they aired it third because obviously it wasn't in the arc.
Right. It wasn't, you know, the big, imagine if they came back like, oh, we found the ship in the water.
And then they premiered with this.
Oh,
no.
Time to go back to.
No, they just filmed this first. It was always going to be third. But
so, yeah, we see that this doof gets pulled through the drive-in window.
Yeah, because, I was going to say the whole point of showing it from the perspective of Rob Roberts is that in the beginning, we even get it. He's like, no, we're closed. Go away. Go away. Go away. And he's doing everything in his power not to eat this guy's brain. And this guy just made it too easy. So he pulls him him into the window where he's attacked and killed. Yeah. And it's later discovered that he has had his brain removed from a skull.
Right, because essentially the next day we see a skull. We see Rob go into work and essentially they find out that this guy's car was found 10 miles away.
Yeah, my favorite part about the beginning is when Rob goes into work and he's just like, you are in control of your own destiny, which is like basically him like repeating some sort of mantra.
Because we'll find out later that he's, you know, watching these like appetite suppressing motivational videos. Yeah. I thought it was more so this dude's working a dead end job. He needs some sort of motivation.
No, he's he can't stop eating brains and he's doing everything in his power to stop eating brains.
Yeah, I do find it interesting. So the smoking gun that they have here initially that leads us to Durwood Spinks. Was like, oh, there's an employee button, the Free for Fridays.
Yes. And that was found at the location or at with the body.
Yeah. And so I think I missed this. Did Rob take Durwood Spink's button? Because he has his.
I don't know. Maybe there was an extra one or something.
Yeah. Because Rob definitely had. And I thought initially, like, oh, this is going to be Rob immediately gets fingered here.
Yeah.
But it turns out either Durwood Spinks doesn't have one or he like doesn't. He refuses to show it.
Yeah. You know? I can't remember. And I don't think it's one of those things that like, that is necessarily you're supposed to know, but
I still can't get over Durwood Spinks.
Durwood Spinks. But yeah, he's missing his button and Scully's like, yeah, that's definitely him because he has a criminal record. So
yeah,
that's, he becomes their main suspect. But,
there's
Mulder
a fun-
thinks something else is going on.
Yeah. There's a fun scene here where Mulder and Scully kick everyone out of the restaurant to do some investigation and Rob, you know, like puckishly flips on the intercom so that he can hear what's happening. And Mulder and Scully basically talk out loud of, okay, this guy had his brain very neatly removed, and Mulder theorized that it was eaten.
Yeah, well, they actually say it wasn't neatly removed. It was just removed. Mm-hmm. So Scully's whole thing is like, I don't think this was a, like a ritualistic killing in the end. She says that because like, there was no like care taken, you know, but it was removed by a proboscis.
Yeah, or like teeth, sharpened teeth or a proboscis.
I know the word proboscis. I just don't like that word.
It very much reminds me of learning about animals.
Well, yeah. So a proboscis, the big one that you would know is a hummingbird.
Literally.
Yeah. Or like a bee using that to get the nectar of a flower or something like that.
Yeah. Like a needle mouth.
No, it's just like they have it and then they use it for feeding and sucking. Yeah, so I guess a needle mouth.
Needle mouth is, needle you know, mouth. The biologically correct way to say it.
Anyway.
There's a moment here where Mulder freaks out because he thinks he saw brain matter, but it's actually ground beef.
Yeah, and I do think that Mulder immediately does suspect Rob Roberts because he is just really weird.
He follows Rob around a lot in this episode, and it's understandable because we see Rob go home and he immediately incriminates himself because we see that he has been trying to wash the blood out of his work uniform,
and which was really silly. So he eventually like bags it all up and tries to like bring it to the trash,
and he's stopped by Mulder because Rob had been the employee who stayed behind the night of the murder, and so Mulder's like, all right, just following up on some leads here. And then there's this, obviously, you know, almost like the telltale heart, right? The blood starts leaking out of the garbage bag. Mulder's not able to see it. He does notice blood coming out of Rob's mouth, though I guess that's him biting his lip. And about, do you think he craves his own blood?
No, I think he's biting his lip to stop him from like doing something.
You think so?
People like, because if you cause yourself pain, it'll like reset yourself. It's like why you like slap yourself to keep yourself awake, that kind of thing.
But you think he did it to distract Mulder, though? You think
I think he did it as like a compulsion.
Okay,
like,
I thought you were implying that criminal mastermind here has to distract Mulder.
The thing about Rob Roberts is that he's not a criminal mastermind, that he's like doing everything in his power to like change himself because he doesn't want to be a bad person. He has like a compulsion to eat brains. Like he's a mutant, basically.
Well, I guess I answered my own question about the blood because after he tosses the garbage, he like finds the blood on his fingers
and he like licks it,
savoring it like he had a nice juicy
because I think for him his compulsion is to eat brains, but like that the blood is part of that, I guess. But it's all about his hunger. It's uncontrollable.
He spies what will end up being his next victim eventually across the street. And so initially, it sort of looks like a Mulder look.
It looks like Mulder. And he walks up to him thinking it's Mulder. And the guy like, or he stares at him. And the guy turns around. You realize it's not Mulder. He goes, hey, what are you looking at? But the guy ends up being a private investigator who his landlady, Sylvia, her husband hired to
her ex-husband hired.
Her ex-husband, yeah, to like get some dirt on her or something.
To spy on her.
Yeah.
So, but Rob...
But he thinks that it's about him.
Yeah, because he's paranoid AF, because this guy has been sitting outside of his apartment essentially the entire day. But this is where we also get the effects coming in, right? This is where we see Rob is sporting fake teeth.
Fake teeth.
Fake ears.
Fake ears, which is weird.
A wig. Yeah, I don't know about that, because obviously this is a mutant thing, right? Yes. Not an alien thing.
No, not an alien thing. I mean, as far as we're aware.
So did that not necessitate the need for ears, I suppose?
I guess not.
I it sort of looks like a Nosferatu.
Or he can hear without, they're not like external ears, is what my guess is, because he does have like little holes there.
Yeah, he does have little like skin that folds in. I find it interesting because Spencer will bring this up, that like in the future when he goes to visit this therapist, his ear will fall off. Mm-hmm. How many times do you think that's happened in his life?
Probably a lot.
Exactly. Do you think people just not pay attention to the fact that his ears fall off on a common basis?
Exactly.
So we find out here that, like you mentioned, Rob is a hesitant villain here. Mm-hmm. He's watching motivational tapes. He's downing an entire pack of appetite suppressant gum. This feels very 90s.
This is super 90s. I mean, I think that the... as an avid listener of medical podcasts, I've learned all about the 90s and diet pills. Yeah. And I think that it was like a huge thing prior to the FDA putting some like stop on all of this. You had literal stimulants out there. People were just eating stimulants.
Caffeine pills, speed.
Yeah. Like what the big one is, like, I forget what it's called, but yeah. Anyway, amphetamines. People were just taking amphetamines.
Speed, exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, to lose weight. And they did lose weight because they were on speed.
Exactly.
But yeah, so he basically is in his house, and he is, I guess, followed home by Sphinx.
Durwood Sphinx.
Comes a knocking on his door.
This is a really weird episode where Durwood Sphinx and Rob, either they have like keys to each other's places, or they just like are very easily able to get into each other's houses.
Yeah, I guess so. Or maybe it's the 90s and it's just easy to do
Everyone unlocks their doors, including Durwood Sphinx.
Yeah, or he just lives in a shithole and it's able to easily be broken into.
So Durwood Sphinx reveals that he had gotten fired because they believe that he had murdered this guy. Really?
Well, and he also, he basically says he's fired because he lied about his criminal record.
Oh, gosh. I was like, they're really jumping to conclusions by firing him a day
after. They find out about his criminal record, which he didn't disclose on his job application. So they fire him, which in this day and age is not something you could do. Unless it was something that inhibited you from doing your job, which it obviously doesn't. Right. And he basically tells Rob, like, hey, I left you to lock up, and then I came back after because I don't know why he says
I'm Durwood Sphinx.
Because I'm Durwood Sphinx, and he says, I know what you did. I have a bottle of your diet pills, and there's a bloody fingerprint on the top.
Exactly. Literally, your fingerprints are in blood right now.
Yeah.
And essentially, he blackmails him.
Yeah, right? He's like, give me all your money. I'll take all your shitty electronics, and that'll be great.
Yeah, so Rob is spiraling right now, so much so
I would be too, yeah.
So he
not good.
The company behind Big Juicy Boy, or whatever this is called, offers like counseling services.
Lucky Boy.
Lucky Boy.
Big Juicy Boy?
What's up, Big Juicy Boy?
No.
But they offer counseling services to those that might be aggrieved by the situation. Sort of like...
It's like a legal measure.
Yeah, but like, you know, when if someone dies in your high school, right? Like they offer that. And so
she says she's calling because it's part of their insurance policy to do this.
Right. This is like Rob's Dr. Melfi in a way. He's going to go visit her. I forget. Do we have her name?
I forget her name in the show, but
we know her from other stuff.
So she, and I was like, I recognize, Dr. Mindy.
Oh, the Mindy Project.
Dr. Mindy. So I recognize her as the mom from Halloween Town.
Yeah, very apt timing.
Her name is Judith Hogan. She's been in, a lot of stuff. She was in Armageddon. She was in, tons of shit. I would like to point out that she was April from the Ninja Turtles movies.
The original ones.
Yeah. Not the 90s ones.
Yeah. with what's his name is Casey Jones.
Oh my god, yes. Fucking love that.
Yeah, and he's like, your first crush was Casey Jones from those Ninja Turtles movies.
Whose was it?
Many people.
No, I don't think you're right there. I think you're incorrect.
Shout us out if one of your first crushes was Casey Jones from the 80s Ninja Turtles movies.
I think you're... I also wanted to be her in those movies because she wore those like high shorts and she looked so good.
Did she wear like the yellow jumpsuit in the movie?
No. She wore these like cut-off Daisy Dukes and she just looks like so cool.
Wow, who would have thought that Megan Fox would not be the most scandalous April O'Neil?
No, definitely not. But that was before this anyway, so she's much older here anyway.
Yeah. But basically Rob goes to see her and he starts to get tempted by the hunger. Mm-hmm. He nearly eats her here, but he decides like, no, well, I might as well just leave abruptly and not create a worse situation for myself.
Is this before or after he goes to no, this is after. So before he also goes to Spinks's apartment to try to find the pills, right?
No, so this is, he's gonna steer
it's
for the
like
first
simultaneously
time, and then he'll come clean later on.
I see.
He'll go back to Big Juicy Boy and Durwood Spick shows up to grab his paycheck, and this is when he goes into the whole like, I used to dip my nuts in the coleslaw.
So gross.
Classic Durwood Spinks.
Yeah, also that bucket of coleslaw is alarming.
Yeah, that is a giant vat of coleslaw.
It reminds me of the scene from Never Been Kissed where I think it's whoever the guy that plays her sister,
David Arquette.
David Arquette, yeah, eats a whole bucket of coleslaw.
Oh yeah,
as a dare, and
didn't
becomes
he do that on the first day to become instantly
and now
popular
he's cool
kid.
And popular. So stupid.
So this
I love
when,
that movie.
This is when Rob goes to.
That's the second week in a row I've referenced that movie.
It's a great movie.
Great flick.
Well, because I think it's Octavia Spencer was in it.
True.
Rob goes to the Spinks residence.
Yes. Because he wants to try to find the bottle,
exactly.
Which is dumb. Why would the guy keep
and
it
of
there?
Of course, Durwood Spinks finds him. And so this is where Rob will truly reveal his true Voldemort form.
So he's hiding in the closet and Spinks basically like arms himself with a baseball bat and starts going towards the closet and he starts taking off his ears, takes off his wig, takes off his teeth and comes out of the closet and eats his brain. Proboscis!
I didn't notice his eyes turn black. Do you think
he took the contacts out too.
Oh, yeah, contacts.
Yeah,
he
basically, there's one image where he's like folding the colored contact out.
I have to say, so pseudo Lost spoilers, tune out for the next minute if you don't want to hear Lost spoilers. I'd say this is infinitely a worse way to die for Mark Pellegrino than getting stabbed by Benjamin Linus. This seems much more gruesome.
Yeah, proboscis to the head? Not great.
I mean, it does seem like a one-shot here where, like,
yes, he's dead. He dies instantly.
I would not want to, like, I'd rather get kicked into a fire and burst into ashes than have my brain eaten by Rob Roberts.
Yeah, neither sound great. But at least the other one was a little bit more like, I would say epic.
Yeah.
This is pretty sad.
It's epic in a different way. I like how it sort of shot out. It almost seemed like something out of a face hugger, you know?
Yeah, so it's like a little, like, spider thing.
So Rob is going to now not exactly come clean to his counselor, but I think he realizes how deep in he is. He has now killed 3 people in a seemingly, like, 2 days.
Yeah, and she's like, she sees that there's something up with him. It's not the rest of the interview she's having.
She's giving this 90s pop psychology, right, of, oh, there's a mirror that reflects back actually an ugly and warped version of ourselves. If the most handsome in the world, like Peter Jennings, went into a funhouse.
Yes. And so he admits that he has an eating disorder, which is like wild.
Technically eating.
And so she sends him to Overeaters Anonymous, which I didn't realize was a thing. But that's,
is it a thing?
I'm sure it is.
I'm
yeah.
Sure it was. I don't know if it is now.
Yeah, it was founded in 1960, apparently.
I would imagine that maybe it's expanded now to be more of like an eating disorder.
Overeaters Anonymous estimates its membership at over 60,000 people in about 6,500 group meetings in over 75 countries.
Wow.
They call it OA.
Oh, the OA.
Yeah.
Start doing the 5 movements.
Oh, no. But yeah, I'm sure it's about more than overeating, but... yeah, so she sends him there because she doesn't realize that he just eats brains.
Yeah, so this is when Mulder and Scully will basically drop in.
Oh, finally, yeah. Remember them?
Like, hey, do you know anything about Durwood Spinks? And he says, no, that's a ridiculous name. Mm-hmm. Why would I know that? Rob is going to go to Overeaters Anonymous. This is where he's going to find, you mentioned her before, the landlady, Sylvia. Seems like a nice enough lady.
Yeah, she's very nice. And they're sitting down, they're bonding. We also remember there's a part now where Mulder, like, talks about the original guy's missing brain and that a tiny shark tooth was discovered by Scully when she was doing the autopsy, I guess, in the skull. But yeah, basically Rob sees Sylvia at the meeting, but he doesn't respond well.
But of course, this happens in every single scene in like a blank anonymous pop culture institution where they're like, oh, you new character must go up and speak.
Yeah. So while he's speaking, he's like giving a very visceral description of eating a brain.
He's basically like, he's at half mast essentially down there with the, with how excited he is talking about eating brains.
He's saying it's salty and buttery.
Delicious. It's like biting into a juicy cloud.
Yeah. What's the kicker about this is that everybody in the room is also like, oh yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. But they're all thinking about like, pie.
Yeah, exactly.
Donuts.
Not brains.
Not brains.
Maybe there was a couple people out there.
Well, and so he starts, this is like one of the special effects of the show where he starts seeing like pulsating brains in everybody's skull, which I thought was a little
maybe
cheesy.
Maybe that was just a tactic to make sure he wasn't nervous, right? Like if you can imagine everyone in your underwear, just
so
imagine
is this what
brains.
He sees wherever he goes?
Oh, that's interesting. That's like
whenever he gets hungry, he starts seeing pulsating brains.
Well, that reminds me of Edward Toombs, yes. Right? For many reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't he like see people in
yes,
a certain way.
Yeah.
So Rob, unfortunately, like you said, has made a bond with his lady, his landlady. Gonna be a bit of a different bond as Rob sort of like regretfully realizes that she has to be his next victim.
Well, yeah. So he says goodnight to her, but then his hunger becomes like too overpowering and he like has to kill her, basically. Yeah.
Which is sad. She again was super, at least Durwood Spinks was a douche. Mm-hmm. And this the opening guy seemed like an a-hole and this private investigator was doing some like bad thing.
Yeah.
This lady was perfectly nice and fine.
I think this was like the pinnacle of his like compulsion. Like
right,
he
where
couldn't
the hunger
help.
Knows no morality.
Yeah. Or he just like had to. And so to cover this all up, he disposes of her body somehow. I forget. He like gets rid of it.
Yeah.
And then he like destroys his own apartment.
Yeah, to blame Durwood Spinks.
Yes.
Saying like, oh, you won't believe this. Durwood Spinks came by and smashed up my place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Mulder's like, do you know this guy, this private investigator? And Rob's like, no. And then that's when they find Sylvia dead.
This is just when everything... it's calamitous train wrecks upon plane
wrecks.
Well,
so he's going to run.
Can't remember. Does Dr. Mindy drop by?
Yeah. So she drops by because he didn't show up at their meeting. Mm-hmm. And this is when he's like packing to like run away.
Yeah. And this is where he starts to just come completely unglued. And we're not just talking about his ears, right? He said, oh, I went to your meeting. It was a waste of time. You can't fight biology. I'm sick of being someone that I'm not.
Yeah. And so she's like, I know that you murdered that guy. Like, I know that it's you. And he's like, oh yeah, I did, but also you don't know the half of it. And he starts like taking off his ears and stuff.
Said, when I killed your brother, I looked just like this.
Yeah. And so it's confusing to him because she like doesn't show fear. She's like accepts him, which is weird.
I guess when you're
she just feels bad
she's
for
a
him.
Very well-trained psychologist that if when someone pulls off their ears and their hair, you just completely give a stone face.
And so I guess when they found Sylvia's body, the Mulder and Scully are like, oh, it must be Rob, and so they come back.
Yeah, so basically
seems like a bit of a stretch, but they
Rob
come back.
was going to eat Dr. Mindy.
Yes, of
Mulder
course
comes
gotta.
In to stop him, and basically this Dr. Mindy tries to talk him down, saying, you know, be the good person I know you are. Conceal, don't feel. But Rob is just too overpowered by the hunger. He charges Mulder, and Mulder is forced to shoot and kill him.
And Mindy's like, why? Why'd you do it? And he's like, I can't be something I'm not.
Yeah, it's very much, I don't know, the Elephant Man.
Yeah, which I actually kind of like that final ending. Pretty cool.
It's interesting, because what I really enjoyed about this episode, as opposed to an episode like Tombs and Squeeze, which is probably the closest comparison, is because we see it from this vantage point, it is very... It's not very, I would say it's sympathetic. Definitely
it's sympathetic.
More sympathetic than Eugene Victor Tombs.
And I would say it's very, I don't want to say it's... not as emotional, but there's no like investment with Mulder and Scully in this. Whereas in Tombs, like there is Mulder and Scully are deep in that.
Yeah.
Whereas they're barely in this episode. So like you have to like get to know this guy, care about him, and then feel bad that he died. Whereas in the other ones, it's like you can feel sympathetic to him, but you're also more worried about Mulder and Scully. Whereas in this, there's no stake in this.
True. You know, Rob Roberts does not kidnap Scully like Eugene Tombs does underneath an escalator. So it allows us to, I think it's also an interesting allegory for this idea of addiction as well and compulsion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't all want to eat brains, but I think we all succumb to certain vices that make us feel like at the end, you know, I am
who I am.
Exactly. I can't fight biology from that perspective, which is a sad but true fact about addiction, which is a disease.
Yeah. This is a fine. It's good.
I enjoyed it. Listen, it was worth it just to learn about Durwood.
I guess that's true. And then also just some side notes. So, the guy that plays the agent, private investigator, mm-hmm. is actually David Duchovny's stunt double. Which is pretty fun. Oh,
well, that makes sense as to why, like, one of his stand-ins.
Yeah, so he'll appear a few times, I guess. And yeah, I think I already mentioned the stuff about the, being filmed and all that. So. Mm-hmm. They were only available for 2 combined days of filming.
Wow.
I wrote down.
So they, the two of them. I wouldn't say they filmed this entire episode in 2 days, right?
No, just them.
Wow. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Grab some food if you want to. Just nothing out of anyone's head. When we come back, it's time to attend a magic show with the amazing Malini. All right, we're back. We're getting boozy. I brought you a Bellini.
That was dumb.
I was just like, how do you say it with a cold? Malini.
Yeah.
It's time to get into magic, begrudgingly from you. We got a magic-based episode of The X-Files.
Well, I like this episode. I'm just saying, in real life, I'm not one to seek out magicians. I'm not a Chris Angel fan. I'm not a...
I actually don't know anyone who is a Chris Angel fan.
I know a lot of people who like him, obviously.
Really? I think there are people who ironically love him nowadays. I feel like he was such a...
I feel like real weirdos love him.
Butt of the joke.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But then there's also, like, what's his face?
David Blaine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I could care less.
Cheez-Its, David Blaine. So that being said, speaking of real-life magicians, mm-hmm. we have a couple in this episode, right? Let's continue on the train of interesting guest stars.
Yeah, so I guess that the episode was written with the main character in mind. So Vince Gilligan is part of it, but I guess Frank Spotnitz is mm-hmm. how you say it, was the one who largely thought of all of this, and I guess he wanted to do an episode with magic and illusion since like the beginning, and he finally got to do it. So I guess the
that
guy
was white whale.
Yeah, so I guess the guy who plays Malini, his name is Ricky Jay, and he's one of Frank Spotnitz's favorite magicians, and he was brought in to play the part of Malini.
He reminds me a lot of if Orson Welles did magic,
yeah, or very
like,
much
or
so.
Alfred Hitchcock, like he yeah. very much has that yeah. type of look to him.
And then the other guy's name is Robert Lissardo, and he, oh no, that's not him. Jonathan Levitt. Yeah, that's Jonathan Levitt. And I looked him up, and he actually was a host of a VH1 show about magic back in the day.
I remember that back when they were doing the celebrity mm-hmm. like let's bring on D-list.
They called it Celebricadabra.
What a mouthful.
And he's, I guess, pretty like, well-known and still performs and stuff, you know, like live and all of that.
I gotta say, I really like this episode because of how unique it is. And I guess it makes sense given the thematic concepts of magic.
And I will say I like it better knowing that these are actual magicians, because I do think there's something to be said for like the skill that goes into all of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to open here, the cold open is the titular amazing Malini. Mm-hmm. He's performing out of a shitty little van on the boardwalk. And he does like an entire routine, and he does a trick with cups and balls and turning it into fruit. And it's interesting, yeah, because I would assume these are legitimate tricks that these people are doing.
And so basically, I mean, he's heckled right from the beginning
by the guy who turns out to be LaBonge.
By Billy Bones.
It's not Billy Bones.
No, I know. I just like his name is Billy LaBonge.
It's not is that Billy Crudup, I think, who plays Billy Bones in Muppet Treasure Island?
Anyone who's ever named Billy, I call them Billy Bones.
Trying to be Bland Pugh.
Yeah, exactly. So he's heckled during his little thing, and I do like the trick that he does. I feel like it's got this like air of like mystery to it, but it is very like old school.
It's very much like children's birthday mm-hmm. party magician.
Yeah, or like what you would do at the turn of the century. Like
exactly.
Magic.
I guess though it's better than the CGI trick that they do of him turning his head all the way around. God, that looked terrible.
It did look pretty bad. So
it looked like they literally just took his head and like swung.
And they never explained that, and that's kind of like the butt of the joke throughout the episode and at the end as well. But basically Himeline, he's going to only be paid $75 for this. And the guy that ain't him, when he goes to pay him, comes to the car and his head falls off. His severed head just rolls on out of the car window.
It's
pretty funny. And the guy's face is like, oh.
Oh, his head fell off.
Did I do that?
No, I'm a murderer.
Yeah. More than his job is worth to go into any of that.
What I really like about this episode is that it's a mystery, but it's more of a mystery, like almost a heist episode.
Yes, it is a heist.
Like Ocean's 11, where there's a big reveal at the end.
But you don't realize that's what it is until the end.
Exactly.
You think it's about solving the death of one of the magicians. You find out there's more than one.
You find out there are two Malignies.
But you think it's about solving this murder, and then you think it's about finding out why he would fake a murder, and then you think it's about why he would try to get out of this debt to this guy, and then you find out they've been working together all along.
It's this odd, like, layers upon layers.
Which I like.
It's interesting because, you know, while Malignie is the titular focus, I feel like there's much more focus on LaBange himself.
Yeah, because he's the one doing the busy work.
Right.
He's pretending to heckle.
He's the one that's supposed to be alive.
Right, so he's pretending to heckle, and then he pretends to be Alvarez later in the stealing the stuff. So he's the one doing all of the legwork here, and no pun intended, because we're gonna meet somebody else in a minute. But
Amazing Malignie, you got no legs.
You got no legs.
Want to use some ice cream? Mulder and Scully have been brought in to investigate this. Scully just believes it's straight up murder. Mulder is just, of course this dude is obsessed with magic.
Right? Yeah, of course.
He's talking like the magician, being like, oh, Scully, but you have to look at the illusion.
Exactly.
Going on behind
and Scully's just like, this is complete garbage. Like, go away.
Speaking of garbage, they're going to watch a tape of the performance from the boardwalk and track the fingerprints that LaBange left on his soda cup.
Yeah, because she notices.
He's a person of interest. Like, he's the only one that was really showing a negative attitude.
Yeah, and so when they come to him, he basically tells them that he thought that he was like a ripoff. Like, he was like old school. Like, he wasn't cool. He wasn't like new magic or whatever.
Because magicians turn their hands around like 500 degrees.
Well, no, so he says like, oh, what he did, like, that's nothing. Like, see, I can do it. And he turns his entire hand in a full circle, which I guess has something to do with being like double jointed or something.
Well, I think
practice and all that.
There's also this thing, and I think Spencer wrote about this as well, where I think you could really easily make a trick where you're, because the camera just focused on the hand, right? Like, you could just very easily.
But I do think people are
body around.
I do think some people are able to do that.
Yeah.
But
Scully's going to do it later on the episode. I do not think Julian Anderson is double jointed.
No, but either way, he's showing you that it's possible outside of like some sort of like magic. It's like an illusion is basically what he's saying. And then they're going to head over to do a little autopsy.
Yeah, I do like LaBange comparing him and Malignie to Mozart and Salieri.
I hate LaBange in this.
Did you ever see Amadeus?
I have seen Amadeus. I've seen it through maybe once.
Yeah, it's a long movie.
Tried to watch it when I got older and like really could maybe understand it and never made it through.
Yeah, I just think it's fun that, again, this would be a guy that he thinks he's super highbrow.
Yes, exactly.
Despite the fact that his trick is showing him, look at what my elbow can do.
Well, that's the thing about magic that I hate, is that they all think it's like super highbrow. They all think that it is like an art, and it is. Don't get me wrong. It takes skill. It takes practice. It takes all of that. But like the fact that it's like, they all come at it with this, like, this is the most amazing thing since sliced bread. Like, I can't. I just can't get on board with that kind of ego.
So the autopsy absolutely throws things out of whack because it shows that Malignie's head was attached via spirit gum, like he put on a fake mustache.
And that it was cut cleanly off after he died of a heart attack.
And that the body has been dead for over a month.
And refrigerated.
So many.
Even though, like, and this is like very confusing to them because the carnival manager, the guy who was paying him earlier, was like, oh, I spoke to him like right before that.
Him.
So it's a little confusing. They're not quite sure what's going on. Meanwhile, we are back with LaBange, who is going to a man called Sissy Alvarez.
Sissy?
Like
C-C-S.
C-I-S-S-Y.
That doesn't help things. His name is still Sissy.
I mean, his name is probably something else, but he's known as Sissy Alvarez. Yeah, exactly.
Well, this guy is, again, another 90s trope, right? Yeah. Like the tatted up ex-con.
Has, like, hate written on his knuckles or something.
Exactly. Hangs out in an empty pool bar with his cronies.
So he's an ex-con, and
who actually was in, because we should mention that LaBange was an ex-con as well. He was, maybe he was in the same cell block with Sherwood Spinks. He was put away for pickpocketing, like Oliver Twist style, apparently.
Perhaps.
I didn't realize they still arrested people for pickpocketing.
I mean, maybe he must have done it more than once or something. Like he's an illusion. Yeah, I don't know. He probably like was doing it like at a large venue or something because he thought he was cool and a magician. Anyway, he basically is coming to this guy being like, I know that Malini owed you money.
A.K.A. Herman Pinchback.
A.K.A. Herman Pinchback.
Which feels like, honestly, Malini feels like the normal name and Herman Pinchback feels like the stage name.
Yeah, but I guess Malini is a name of a magician from the turn of the century and he like hacks the name.
Oh, right. That's what LeBond says, right? That he took on the name of this guy.
Yeah, the amazing Malini. Yeah. And so he basically says, I know this guy owed you money. By the way, he's dead. By the way, I made his head fall off. And I will get you all the money that you want and are owed and more if you help me with something.
I will. So he does a trick where he lights his hand on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that he's holding Jesse Alvarez's wallet. Very, very, like, incredibly calm reaction from everyone else to someone's hand being lit on fire.
Yeah, so I feel like the hand being lit on fire was not that amazing to me because I know of things like non-burning accelerants that you can do that with because of our work in theater.
Right, but I would still, no matter what,
it would react.
At least raise my eyebrows.
But I guess that they were probably given the note like, okay, you're not impressed until he shows you the wallet.
Right, because you're thugs. You've seen a bunch of stuff on the street. Someone lighting their hand on fire, child's play.
But they stole your wallet? Gasp.
Yeah. So Mulder and Scully are going to go see Herman Pinchback's twin brother,
Albert Pinchback,
who works in a bank. Apparently, according to Spencer, this is actually the same chain of bank from Monday.
Oh, that's funny.
So they sort of have like the Let's potato chips of the X-Files here with the bank.
Like the Morley.
So Albert has a neck brace and no legs.
Yeah, he basically says, I got into a car accident in Mexico and I lost my legs and I hurt my neck, I guess. Yeah,
because initially, Albert's going to give this whole backstory and say, well, I used to do magic with my brother, but I gave it up. And Mulder's like, I got you. You're actually the real Malini who faked his death. He's like, well, I have no legs.
He's like, I'd love if that were the case, but I have no legs. I lost them in Mexico. And he rolls out and he's a man in a wheelchair with no legs.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if they did like a Lieutenant Dan.
And I don't know if this guy is like an actor, but I find his acting to be very funny. Like, it's very
I would imagine as a magician, I do think you have to be performative a bit. So yeah. I would not be surprised if he's probably done something.
But I'm glad that he's not super performative. He kind of has this like low-key vibe and I enjoy it. It's all very like monotone.
So now Mulder and Scully are now going to go to LaBange to say, listen, I know you hate the dude, but you're the only person we can really lean on at this point to help solve the mystery. You really like this bit that he did with the secret trap door.
I did. I thought it was so funny because he thought that he was. So what's funny about this is that he knew that there wasn't a trap door there.
Yeah.
And he pretended to think there was a trap door there and then dropped the note from Alvarez, the marker, during his like pretend finding of the trap door. But when it's happening, you're like, he's like, if I, you know, he like does a very like, and there's a trap door here, and there isn't. And it's very funny.
So we start to get LaBange's plan being put into effect, where first off, Albert's going to have a really weird conversation with a
this
guard.
Really threw me. This would never happen today.
So we will find out later. He signs out this like armored, this is part of, again, the whole ruse.
He does this every day.
Yeah,
he works at an armored
truck to deliver the money.
We used to do this in retail. You'd have to sign for the armored truck when they bring the change for you.
But Albert's going to have a conversation with the guards about like his gun.
Well, so he probably sees these guys every day. So he has a very casual relationship with him. They clearly like are sympathetic to his plight, having no legs. And so he basically is like, hey, I'm thinking about getting one of these after my accident in Mexico. And he was like, oh, yeah, here, why don't you check it out? Just hands over his gun. So at first he takes the clip out and I'm like, oh, he's going to take the clip out and let him see the gun without the clip. Hands him the clip and the gun.
Why don't you load it yourself, please?
Yeah, like it's, and so basically we're going to find out later that he swaps the clip for blanks.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So he reloads it with blanks.
Yeah.
Because he has the ability to do that sort of sleight of hand.
Wild. I guess he knew that these guards were just big, big doofs that they would actually give him.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying like this would never happen in this day and age with the gun issues that we have in this country. Like nobody would hand over a gun to somebody.
Yeah.
Like unless they were like your family member. And even then you would take out the clip and you would put in the safety on. Like,
exactly. So after they have that little weird exchange, Sissy Alvarez is going to come in and basically say, like, oh, you need to redeem your brother's debt.
Yeah. So basically he is told about the marker and his brother dying. So he's like, I'm going to basically, I guess LaBange gets him to go there is probably his plan.
LaBange, because LaBange told him,
like, yes, you're going to help me.
I can tell you where to go and like who to see. And so I think Sissy Alvarez assumes that, okay, he works at the bank. This is where I'll get my money. But really what LaBange was doing was setting him up so that he could impersonate Sissy Alvarez as they, like, the armored van stops and they're like, something's in there, and it's LaBange.
Yeah, so basically, and we find out that Albert set, or Pinchbeck set all that up, but they need Alvarez going into the bank. They need that on video.
Right, they need that sort of, like,
surveillance. Again,
smoking gun, for lack of a better term.
Exactly. And so LaBange fake holds up the van.
Yeah, he puts on, like, those temporary 25-cent tattoos.
And then he fake holds up the van, gets away, and we find out that Alvarez gets arrested because of that attempted robbery later.
Exactly. I would say, while this is all going on, Mulder's doing some nice tricks with a coin.
Yeah.
I wonder, do you think...
Is that the knuckle thing?
Yeah, do you think David Duchovny knew that? Did he have to learn that?
No, he probably knew that. I feel like that was something people would just teach themselves. Like, I used to try to teach myself that after watching Pirates of the Caribbean.
Nice. I start believing you're in ghost stories.
But yeah, you know, he used to do that. And that's something that what's his name? Johnny Depp. I couldn't remember the name of Johnny Depp. That's Captain so upsetting to me and my mom brain.
I mean, listen, if you forget Johnny Depp's name, it's not the most upsetting thing.
But apparently he could do that in real life, and that's why they put it in there. But I guess it's something that you probably just, like, picked up as, like, a kid in the 90s.
Another thing that LaBange does as part of, again, the big master plan, basically purposely gets himself arrested.
Yes.
Where he essentially walks back into the shady bar, points a gun at Sissy Alvarez, and, like, are we to assume that he, like, called the cops on himself, essentially?
Yeah, basically.
Because he runs outside and the cops are there.
Oh, no, he calls the before he goes into the bar, he makes a call on the payphone and goes, oh my God, somebody's waving a gun around. Walks into the bar, walks out of the bar.
Starts waving a gun around.
Yeah, and that gives him enough time to do that before the cops come. But isn't it before that that Mulder finds out that Pinchbeck is Malini and that he faked his legs?
No, so that happens after this. Yeah, because this is going to be the last we're going to see of LaBange for a while, is that he's going to purposely get himself arrested.
Mm-hmm. And then also Alvarez is arrested because of the attempted robbery earlier. So everyone's getting arrested.
Mulder, meanwhile, makes a bold claim here.
Yeah, this is tough.
Being right, where he, like, essentially throws Albert back out of the wheelchair to reveal that his legs were there.
I will say, at least he takes him into another room. He, like, wheels him into another room and, like, basically says, like, he admits that he's like, I know that this is, you're pretending to be your brother.
But I mean, if this was, like, a cringe comedy, you know, it would have actually been,
he would have been like, an
amputee. He would have actually not had legs and he would have thrown him onto the floor.
But it's not, it's all about the illusion.
Exactly. So Malini's gonna finally come clean, admit who he is. But I love how, much like LaBange and much to your chagrin, like, he has standards, right? That he racked up all these gambling debts, and Scully's like, why didn't you just cheat at cards? He's like, cheat at cards?
I know.
How dare you?
He admits that he found his brother dead of a heart attack at home and used his body as a double.
He went to go for a loan because he was in debt.
anyway,
Malini's going to get arrested here. Mulder and Scully are going to arrest him.
So Malini's arrested. LaBange is arrested. Alvarez is arrested. Alvarez isn't arrested here.
No, they go.
Oh, no, he is arrested, but then he gets out early.
Yeah, and they find the money in the ceiling as well, which doesn't help, right? Like, they go to bust him up, and then a bunch of money falls out of the ceiling.
Right. Because they arrest him because they're like, oh, you attempted robbery earlier. Right. The guard from the truck recognizes the tattoos on his hands.
That's the thing, and that's because he'll look at the
security cameras.
Exactly, and see Alvarez there. So Mulder and Scully, though, they have it all figured out. This is the big reveal. This is the big, like, Hercule Poirot, Sherlock Holmes, I know everything. They go to the jail, and Mulder, you know, approaches these two guys and is like, all right, here's my big brain theory. You were actually working together to get revenge on Sissy Alvarez,
because he was in prison with LaBange, making his life a living hell.
Right. But also Malini racked up. It was very much like,
we have something in common.
It's very much like Murder on the Orient Express, right? Where, speaking of Johnny Depp, they all had an axe to grind against them. So they all ended up doing it.
Yeah. And so basically what they were able to do was get themselves arrested so that they had an airtight alibi. escape because they can,
right?
Because they're magicians, and then return to their cells before they anything was noticed.
And on top of that, now their big plan, which we'll talk about Mulder ends up thwarting, is for them to, because, you know, Molini worked at the bank under the alias of Albert Pinchback, he was able to essentially set up a wire transfer of all this money to the two of them to help resolve the gambling debts and give them a windfall of cash.
But the only way he could do that was if he had, from Mulder, his FBI badge number and his ID or his fingerprint.
Right.
Which he got when he had Mulder pick a card and he was able to see the ID when he flashed it. But Mulder takes the card out of his wallet.
Yep. He takes his wallet in general. Like, he took it from evidence just to stop all of that. So we don't see essentially what happens, but it's a fun note to end on that we don't necessarily need to see these two guys end up with pie all over their face, because assumingly they do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, basically they're free. They're not going to be convicted of any crimes, but they're also not going to make any money.
Right. And so I would imagine that once Sissy Alvarez gets back out, it's going to be...
And that the whole point that they were even called into this was because that they needed an FBI agent.
Yeah.
That was it.
That's the only reason. And that's why everything happened with the fake body.
And then Mulder says, the one thing I don't know is how he was able to turn his head around. And Scully goes, oh, I know that. And she turns her hand 360 degrees. And Mulder says, how did you do that? And she says, magic. So stupid.
Gillian Anderson really didn't have a lot to do this.
I like her vibe there at the end, though. She's just like, yeah, I'm cool.
I like that she was tasting it at the end, but I do feel like, unfortunately, she was a bit sidelined for all these other shenanigans going on in this
episode.
And
even Mulder wasn't really in this that much either. No. I mean, that's pretty standard for season 7. It's like, there are some episodes where he's just not there because he's like kind of phoning it in a little bit.
It is interesting thematically, though, that I feel like in both these episodes, it's Mulder knows the truth, and in the I really give it up to Mulder to be able to outsmart these two magicians in the end, whereas a poor Scully like does autopsies, gives scientific investigations, and that's about it.
Yep.
And turns her hand all the way around.
And that's it.
These were two fun episodes. I think while Hungry has like some schlocky B-movie value to it, on top of like, I think, an emotional weight to it. And The Amazing Molini was just really fun to watch.
Like, it's a fun episode. That's why I like to watch it, because I do think that it's something that is just like very like easy to digest.
Yeah, unlike Brains. Between like the OTT performances, the whole aspect of the magic, and the turn that comes at the end where all is revealed. I think it was an enjoyable episode overall. Talking spooks, who you spooking?
I'm spooking...
Hungry has gotta be Durwood Spinks.
Yeah, Durwood Spinks for sure. And I guess in this one, I'm gonna spook probably Molini's head from the beginning.
Yeah, he made it his dead brother.
His dead brother's head.
Yeah, I'm gonna say... I'm probably gonna say Molini because of what he did with his head.
Yeah, it's like pretty spooky.
Like, he still did turn his head
pretty
all
the way exorcist.
Around. So it is pretty wild. So... yeah, two more episodes of this really unique season 7.
Oh,
down.
it's gonna take a bit of a turn here in these next two episodes we're gonna be watching.
Yeah, so next two, we're actually doing, I believe, two arc episodes. First time we're talking
back to the arc,
the sixth extinction. We're doing episodes 10 and 11, Sein und Zeit, and Closure.
Yeah, so fair warning, we're going to deal with some children stuff in the next episode, but it is all connected to Mulder.
Is it little German children?
I don't know. It's not little German children.
Wasn't the title in German?
It is in German, which is so funny.
Oh, no.
it's not about that.
And Helga.
I'm very upset. Anyway, it's very similar stylistically to the episode we watched in the fourth season, Paper Heart.
Oh, okay. So more child kidnapping.
Sorry.
Oh, joy.
The episode title is in reference to Martin Heidegger's best known work, which means being and time in German.
Oh, and then Closure.
You know, you're very familiar with Martin Heidegger.
Oh, I'm his poster on
the German philosopher.
And so I'm assuming Closure will literally bring closure to that arc.
Yes, correct. It's only two episode arcs.
But is it mythology, or is it just a two-part episode?
It has to do with Mulder's sister a little bit. And his mommy.
All right, so we're getting back to the Mulder of it all next time. Can't bench Mulder and Scully in these episodes.
No, truly can't. They're in it.
So episodes 10 and 11 next week. You know what to do if you had feedback, a Bloomfield files@postshowrecaps.com, xfiles@postshowrecaps.com. Of course, you can tweet us at Angelology, at a Mike Bloom type, at postshowrecaps. And we'll get into it all as we continue through season 7. Spoiler alert for season 7, we're going to be here for quite some time. I think we're like a third or almost halfway through our coverage of it, but it has been very enjoyable, very weird, but very enjoyable so far. So I'm going to be very excited to continue on that train with Sein und Zeit and Closure. Special thanks to Corey B for his fantastic theme song. We'll be back next week covering episodes 10 and 11. Until then, case closed.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.